This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Mary Louise Kelly. I want to tell you a little story and see if you recognize it. It's the story of a 30-something-year-old woman, a New Yorker, who's been through a terrible, nasty divorce. So she decides to take a year for herself to travel and try to heal. The woman starts in Italy, where she gorges on pasta and gelato. That's the pleasure part of the trip. Then she heads to India for yoga and meditation. And finally, she visits Indonesia, where she tries to find balance, but ends up, as you do, meeting a handsome Brazilian man, 17 years her senior, and falling madly in love. All right, if this is all starting to sound familiar, that's because it's the story of Elizabeth Gilbert's mega best-selling memoir from 2006 called Eat, Pray, Love. The book spent more than a year at the number one spot on the New York Times bestseller list. So if that's not a hard act to follow, I don't know what is. But Elizabeth Gilbert decided to try, and she's got a new book coming out called Committed. She joins us from our New York bureau to talk about it. Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Mary Louise.
So we should start with the title, Committed.
A little double meaning?
It's a little bit of a giveaway. I'm sure there were many readers still in suspense. We mentioned that at the end of Eat, Pray, Love, where that left off, you had recently met this Brazilian man, and I guess we can reveal you made it. You're still together.
We're still together. Yeah. It wasn't just a shipboard romance, as my grandmother said.
Congratulations. Tell us about the new book.
Well, it was a kind of an accidental book. I didn't have any intention of writing another memoir, but what happened is that, as readers of Eat, Pray, Love know, I did meet that lovely, handsome Brazilian man, and we made a pretty fierce commitment to each other that we would stay together forever but never marry. Both of us were survivors of bad divorces, and I suppose I don't need to explain to anybody why that would make somebody hesitant to enter into the institution of matrimony again. And we were very happily living out our lives. The problem was he wasn't a U.S. citizen, and every time he came to visit me, there was the famous border crossing and Homeland Security and the INS. And one of these border crossings turned sour one day in Dallas-Fort Worth, and they peeled him out of the line and chucked him in jail and threw him out of the country. And I was informed by a man named Officer Tom at the Homeland Security Department in the Dallas-Fort Worth airport that the only way I could get him back was to marry him. So we like to say that it was an arranged marriage, arranged by the INS.
By the U.S. Department of Homeland Security.
Yes, exactly.
Your parents there.
They were holding the shotgun in the case of this shotgun marriage.
But that took 10 months or more. And so in the meantime, you were in exile together in a way.
We were, and in a way that can sort of only make sense to us, but made perfect sense to us at the time, naturally what we did was just go to Southeast Asia and wait it out there, traveling across Thailand and Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, sort of killing time and hoping to get back in.
So is this new book, Committed, is it a sequel to Eat, Pray, Love?
I don't mind if people call it a sequel. It would certainly be recognizable to people as it's my voice, and obviously these are two characters who you meet in Eat, Pray, Love. The way that I see the difference between the tone of Eat, Pray, Love and the tone of Committed is the tone of romance versus the tone of marriage.
Still in love, but a little bit more sober.
We've turned on all the fluorescent lights. Let's just put it that way. And I very much wanted to. I thought, let's try to strip the tone of romance out of this and really pick this thing apart.
During those months, you interviewed housewives, Hmong housewives in Vietnam, poets, psychologists. At one point, I noticed you were quoting advice from Miss Manners on what makes a good marriage. You cast the net wide, and what did you come back with?
I really had such an aversion to matrimony when I started this, and I actually feared when I started to do research on marriage that the more I discovered about it, the more I would loathe it, you know, especially as a woman. What I didn't expect was to come away with this respect for marriage, and I say that in a guarded sense because I don't want to be mistaken for somebody who has respect for marriage that's so hardline that they want to pass legislation about it. You know, what I'm talking about is a sort of historical respect for something that I discovered is not quite the rigid, boxy institution that I thought it was, but is in fact an ongoing, millennia-long experiment in social living that is being tinkered with and altered with every generation, you know, with every culture, every couple who comes into it puts their mark on it. And it has an almost Darwinian survival that I found really impressive.
I gather that you at one point had an entire draft of this book completed and ready to ship it off to your publisher, and you decided you were going to throw the whole thing away.
Yeah.
How come?
Because it was horrible. It was not fit for human consumption. It was a terrible, terrible book. And it's an awful realization to have something like that happen, because I worked on it for, you know, close to 2 years, and quite diligently and optimistically, the way that one does when one is writing. And it came to me quite suddenly when I printed it out for the first time and opened it up to a random page and read a random paragraph and realized I had really misstepped, and I realized the entire book was wrong.
In what way? Was it the way you were telling the story or the story itself?
Well, at the time, I couldn't quite tell. All I knew was that it was off. And what I know now and what I can see now is that I was trying to appease 6 million Eat, Pray, Love readers when I wrote the first draft of the book. And I had them in the room with me, and I was writing it by committee, imaginarily consulting them as I was going and saying, is this what you liked about Eat, Pray, Love? Did you want more of this with the goofy stuff? You want jokes? Do you want, you know, lightweight? What? You want spiritual things? So the whole thing was very forced and inauthentic. And it became a book that I became certain that nobody would like. I just couldn't put it out there.
It must be wonderful, obviously, to write a book that 6 million people have bought and loved, but it must also be intimidating to think of all those people waiting for whatever you're going to write next.
Yeah, just to be clear, this is the exact definition of what we call a champagne problem.
there are, you know, worse issues. My heart isn't like, bleeding too much for you.
Yeah, here. Please feel sorry for me about that. You know, it's really not that bad in terms of things that happen to people in the world at all. It's just a puzzle, you know. It's a kind of creative puzzle to figure out how you write unselfconsciously again after that. And you really have to narrow down who you're telling the story to. And it wasn't until I narrowed the book down to, you know, 24 people, the women in my life, my sister, my mother, my stepdaughter, my neighbors, all the people who I spend my life talking to. And it just makes a lot more sense now.
It's interesting that circle that you just described, that you say you narrowed it down to the people you had in your mind as you were writing this, all women, unless I'm mistaken. And yet this is a book about your happy marriage to a man.
Yeah, but what you have to understand is that, you know, we live in this time of this radical new social experiment, and I think sometimes we forget how new it is. And the radical, unprecedented new social experiment is, what happens if we give women autonomy, education, finances, you know, control over their sexual biology? What happens if we give you all this freedom? What are you going to do with it? We have like 2 decades of role models on how to do that. And we're all still sort of puzzling it out in a very intense way. And what differentiates, I think, the conversations that women have about intimacy from those that men have, you know, can be exemplified by the fact that when I was 19 years old and I was in college at NYU, my friends and I would sit up until 2 a.m. and sort of panic over how we were going to balance raising our children, being married, and having careers. And I kind of don't think the guys down the hall in the dorm were doing that when they were 19, but we already saw it coming. And this book is sort of picking up the thread of a conversation that I think I've been having with my friends for 20 years.
I have one last question for you. I don't want to let you go before we ask about there's a movie being made about Eat, Pray, Love, the first memoir.
And I heard that too.
Well, and I heard you're being played by Julia Roberts, which
I heard that too.
Must be a little surreal.
No, it's so beyond surreal that I have to say I have not even really begun to process it. I think that maybe when I'm in my 70s, I'll start to unthread how that happened. So it'll be nice because she's sort of going back and reliving my journey, and they're filming it. So it's like I'm going to have a home movie of my trip, but portrayed by someone with flawless skin and 36-inch legs.
Elizabeth Gilbert, we're glad you came in to talk to us today about your new book, Committed. Thank you so much.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.